What is up, everybody? I was almost prepared to say this is the Live Before Lock PGA show. That would just be a bold-faced lie. This is the NFL Draft Show. We are ready. We've got a couple days away, but we are both very excited. I am Ben Raza, and I am here. Look who I brought out. You may be wondering, what does this guy do at the end of March Madness before college football kicks off? We're here to answer that tonight. Matt Gajewski, my man, is with us. I don't get to see you that often now because you're in hibernation mode.
Yeah, dude, it's been since I think maybe we did a Final Four show, Elite Eight show, something like that. But it's been like a month. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Yeah, Baylor taught the Zags a lesson in swift justice. But you know what? We move on. It was a fun March Madness run. And listen, I think society has saturated draft content. We were talking a little before the show. There's a lot out there. But you know what? It is fun to talk about. It's fun to play around with. And more importantly than that, I think you would agree with this. There's money to be made. If you know what you're doing, you could pick some good spots. I do like to bet the draft, as do you.
Yeah, I love betting the draft. A lot of it is information based. So you'll hear news about, and some is credible, some is not, as we'll get to. But we get these little tidbits throughout the draft process. And I think hitting these props early is the key. They do move fast, as you were just noting before the show. And you can find spots throughout the week as information becomes available. And then at the same time, you're parsing information, trying to figure out what to actually use, what not to use.
So yeah, before we dive in, and we're gonna hit all sorts of things. Chat, it's good to see some of my favorite people in here. If you guys have questions, just hit us up. We'll get it in the show. But I want to ask you just a couple of general questions on the draft. The first one that came to mind is when you're doing things, do you ever, because trades is always a hot topic, is someone going to move up and get this guy? When you're looking to make a wager, do you ever incorporate the possibility of a team not in that, you know, particular slot drafting a guy?
In certain positions, quarterback is the main one. And then anytime you have like a blue chip prospect. So in this class, maybe like a Kyle Pitts, I don't think a team like Atlanta would trade down unless some team really gave them like a war chest of assets. But on the defensive side of the ball, someone like Micah Parsons, who's projected to go outside the top 10, you could see someone trade up for him. But outside of that, trades are very, very difficult to predict. So I'm not looking at it too much outside of quarterbacks and just those blue chips.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Listen, the reality of the draft, we were saying this before the show, is it's very difficult to predict. Of course, there's some things that are set in stone, but for the most part, there's going to be a lot of moving parts, and you're really trying to just capture as many permutations as possible. You know, if you think this guy could go in spots 12 through 15 and you're getting under 16, you have multiple chances of hitting that pick. Is there any other general tips that you kind of incorporate? I mean, you're such a extensive college football. Do you feel like you're biased on seeing some of these guys in terms of you have your own grades on them and then you see teams maybe not kind of being in line with yourself?
Yeah, a perfect example of this is like a Justin Fields right now, somebody who I've evaluated highly. And the way I like to look at the information that comes out of like draft insider circles, I guess if Schefter tweets something, you pretty much take whatever Schefter says for what it's worth. But then looking at all the other insiders and seeing if the information is repeated from the same source, if they're saying the same things. So if you have these people that release a lot of mock drafts that are in line with each other, sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. That's when I'll really start looking at the information provided by a lot of the marquee mock drafters.
So yeah, the prerequisite for doing the show is I needed you to be a Justin Fields truther, as am I. Love Justin Fields. We're going to get into that right now, much more, but we'll start with the mortal lock. So we don't need to talk about Trevor Lawrence. He will be going first. You can lay, a crisp $10,000 and get a hundy spot if you want to make some easy money. No doubt about that. Zach Wilson will be going second to my Jets. That is one, though, I want to just dive into a little. There's no value, of course. I would draft Justin Fields second if it was my pick. What do you feel about Zach Wilson? I know we're going to have plenty of time to evaluate this, but just quick thoughts on the BYU product.
Yeah, just on him as a product. I think he's a little more of a project than Justin Fields. He wasn't really asked to do a lot early in his career, and he really took a huge step forward in 2020. Not a lot of people expected him to be in this position. A lot of it is because he played one of the weakest schedules in college football, and he played behind an offensive line that essentially allowed zero pressure the entire year. He performed extremely well in that offense, but it's hard to compare him to other quarterbacks like Trevor Lawrence that faced adversity at times during the college football season. The only time Zach Wilson did was against Coastal Carolina the entire year. And Coastal Carolina, for what I love them, but they are not the same thing as facing a Notre Dame and Alabama or any of the other teams in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I was a fan of Coastal. Coastal also did like mug Zach Wilson to end the half. I don't know if you remember that play. There was like
I rewatched that game last weekend.
Many, many personal fouls. Yeah, listen, Zach Wilson, he's clearly got the arm talent. It felt like one throw at his pro day solidified it. It was a nice throw, but let's not get crazy. But of course, the big news everybody is talking about is the third pick. The Niners own it. I thought it would be Justin Fields. I thought that was going to be a thing. Mac Jones took the early lead. Now Trey Lance is in the discussion. So this is what I want to dig in. A, do you see any value on the board here? And where do you think that the Niners go with the third pick?
So Schefter was talking about this earlier. I believe it was yesterday. And Schefter's one of the only people I'll really trust with information. And he basically said the 49ers traded up for this pick with the idea they were going to draft Mac Jones, but they also had enough time to evaluate Lance and do a deep dive on Fields, which they did. And in that same interview, Schefter then said that they were very impressed with Lance, they were very impressed with Fields, and they haven't made up their decision yet. You're hearing from a lot of other people that Mac Jones will be the pick, and there's a chance that Trey Lance could come off the board as well. But if you're betting it, strictly betting speaking, if we're looking at what Schefter said and the 49ers haven't actually made up their mind, all the value is with Fields at this point. You're not getting any value in the betting markets on Mac Jones. You have to lay minus 300 in some spots. Trey Lance, there's some decent value there. But Justin Fields has the highest payoff, which is where I would look in the betting markets.
Yeah, obviously odds dictate everything, and you are talking north of 5, maybe 6-1 on Fields to go third. I mean, do we want to derail the show? I know our guy Nolan Kelly is in chat. I mean, we could just say, you know what, all the other topics, let's scrap them and let's just do a 40-minute roast of Trey Lance, because I am not sold. I know you're not either. Talk to me about the North Dakota State product that a lot of people obviously aren't going to see them. They're a juggernaut team, and he didn't even throw a pick during a season, which is extremely impressive. But what do you see when you look at him? Is there any comparisons to be made?
He's a really tough prospect to evaluate, and I'm really concerned, I guess is the right word, that teams are so ready to draft Trey Lance this high. We saw Josh Allen work out as a project quarterback, yeah, that's right. But it's very rare that these prospects actually hit. And you could use former North Dakota State player Carson Wentz as another example. Year over year, these project quarterbacks, Drew Locke, even up in the top of the draft, like a Mitch Trubisky, they don't often work out. And with Trey Lance, not only is he coming from the FCS level where he started one season, he would have started this past year, but the COVID-19 pandemic limited them to one game. But he played in a run-first offense. This offense averaged 18 pass attempts per game and 45 run attempts. That's great for Lance as a rusher, and he probably has the best athleticism out of any signal caller in this entire draft, but he barely threw 300 passes in his college career. For reference, Kyle Trask threw over 400 in a single season this year with Florida. So we basically have no sample size with Trey Lance. He wasn't that accurate in this individual sample size. His adjusted completion percentage is 72%, which is easily the worst in the top five. And then we just have a player who's a project overall. The one game he did face notable competition this year against Central Arkansas, they do have Robert Rochelle's on that defense, so there's a couple NFL players. He completed 50% of his passes, threw for 149 yards at his first interception. So his real first taste of adversity, he couldn't even overcome that. So a lot of concerns with Trey Lance. He certainly is not worth a top three pick in my book. But again, there's a lot of smoke here.
Central Arkansas made the show. I didn't think that they would get in, but look at that. And yeah, I mean, I'll just say this again. You are much more in depth on these guys, but it's not like Justin Fields can't move. He is also a dual threat. He's much more accurate. There's no doubt about that. And then you've got Mac Jones, who, you know, it's always a polarizing topic when you play with Waddle and Smith and Najee and that defense. How are you managing the game? Are you AJ McCarron, or do you have some serious talent? Sorry, AJ McCarron. But, you know, there is an element of that. It's going to be fascinating. I guess the last question, I think I know the answer. Is there any chance in your mind that one of the three guys in terms of these QB is not the third pick?
I would say no. You don't just, like, they traded so much draft capital to get up to number three. You wouldn't take somebody else or trade back at that point.
Tend to agree with that. So I'm with you. It seems like, I'll be honest, if I had to take a bet, I think that Trey Lance is going to end up being picked third. I would not do it. You're still seeing around 3-1 out there. I think that's where my money would go. You can't go to Jones. I don't see any way that you have to pass if you think it's going to be Mac Jones. It's one of the other two. in terms of value. But besides the quarterbacks, I know, and we're going to try to peg them as we go along, there's plenty of other big time prospects in this draft. And let's get to the guy that I guess maybe he's going to be the fourth pick to Atlanta. What do you make of Kyle Pitts? Do you think that he's just the best player in the draft, as many have said?
He has to be at least considered the best player in the draft, at least in that realm. We just don't see prospects like him. So with his 6'6", 245 frame, a 4'4", 40-yard dash, he's basically comparable to like a Calvin Johnson athletically. There just aren't athletes with that size and speed that move like Kyle Pitts. So he is a true unicorn in the class.
Do you have a position on him right now? It looks like you can find under 5.5, but you're laying serious juice. Do you think Atlanta just takes best available and adds a massive weapon to Matt Ryan or whoever is going to be playing quarterback in the future for them?
I don't think it's a lock Atlanta takes Kyle Pitts. They have a lot of weaknesses. They have a lot of weaknesses on defense. So I do think they are in the market to trade back. I think it would take a lot because there are a couple blue chip prospects at the top here. But then they just signed Hayden Hurst. So they traded a second round for him, which is nothing to just slouch at. And they could use a wide receiver. Julio Jones is aging. Outside of Jones and Calvin Ridley, you don't really have a strong third receiver. Russell Gage is manning that right now. They've been linked to Ja'Marr Chase, at least in some capacity, too. I think Pitts is the clear favorite, but I don't think it's a lock.
So speaking of Ja'Marr Chase, you just mentioned him. He is also sitting in terms of over-under 5.5. Still juiced to the under, but it's sitting around minus 140, as opposed to Kyle Pitts, who's at minus 225 on DraftKings. That's something that I think you could look to. So do you think between the looking at the draft order, we've got the Falcons 4 and the Bengals 5th. Do you think it's just a swap? One takes Chase, one takes Pitts, and vice versa? Or is there another player that could crash the party in this top 5?
The Bengals have a horrific offensive line. They've had a horrific offensive line for years. So I wouldn't discount Penei Sewell coming off the board at number 5 to the Cincinnati Bengals either. I don't think they address another position. I think it's probably Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase, just with the ties he has to Joe Burrow already. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's Penei Sewell coming off the board there. And if I was taking a position on Ja'Marr Chase, I think the better odds are towards the over.
Okay, really? So you think he could fall a little bit then?
I literally think it's Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase, and I think the odds are probably correct. I'm not going to bet this prop for what it's worth, but if I was, it would be towards the over, just because where the odds are sitting right now. You mentioned it's juice towards the under.
Penei Sewell is an absolute monster, Oregon Duck. I believe, not that this is important, there's another one there, right? There's another Sewell?
There is.
Yeah.
He comes from long bloodlines. He has a lot of family members that have played college football.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. They've got Thibodeau on the other side. They got people. Don't sleep on him. Oh, he's good. We'll be talking about him soon enough. But these are the top end guys I think that we're looking to. But so far in this show, we've mentioned 3 quarterbacks. We've mentioned a unicorn. We've mentioned a top end wide receiver. And we've mentioned what I think is the best tackle in the draft. We've not mentioned anybody in the backfield. And we have not mentioned any defensive players, which is where I want to go right now. You mentioned Parsons a little bit, but the floor is yours, and then we'll dive into it. What do you make of the other side of the ball for this draft? Is it strong? Are there top-end players, and who may they be?
So the two most important players on defense are your edge rushers and your corners. It's a very strong and deep corner class. It's a very, very weak edge rusher class. I think the one blue-chip prospect is Micah Parsons. And unfortunately, he plays linebacker, which is pushing him down a bit here. But Parsons, the product coming out of Penn State, 6'3", 246, and he's just an absolute freak athletically. Ran a 4.36 40-yard dash. So I think he's a candidate to come off the board a little earlier than people expect, just because players aren't built like Micah Parsons. If he was an edge rusher, which he's about the same size as like an Azeez Ojulari, he would be the number one edge rusher in this class. He's a guy, he opted out this past year, but if you go back to his 2019 tape, active against the pass, broke up 5 passes, forced 4 fumbles, had 5 sacks, 14 tackles for loss, 109 tackles, all in 13 games. So he really does it all. But again, linebacker is a very difficult position to play, not only at the college level, but NFL as well. A lot of even the first round picks last year did not perform very well at all. Patrick Queen's an example there. So I think if there is one player that comes off the board earlier than expected, it's Parsons. But overall, it's a fairly weak defensive class.
What do you make? You mentioned, you know, some of the rushers and some of the corners. Obviously, Bama's got like a pro defense already. Patrick Surtain, not his father. There's another one. Is he going to be – he right now he is minus 110 to be the first defensive player drafted overall. What do you make of that line? Or is it Horn or is it Parsons or someone else?
I think it's pretty efficient right now. So the Cowboys have huge weaknesses on defense, mainly at corner, which is positive for them. It's a strong corner class. They're in position to take the number one corner here in Surtain. And then they're weak on the edges. I think there's a chance maybe they go with an edge rusher just because that's a very weak position group. And if they wait to the second round, you're going to get somebody that you're probably not very comfortable with. Whereas there's pretty good corners in the second round. Maybe you get someone like Eric Stokes there. But overall, I think they don't wait on the corner position. They just take the number one guy in Patrick Surtain. The odds are efficient in my mind.
Is there anybody else besides these guys as we work down that you have an eye on in terms of a prop, whether it's an over-under, whether it's like the first edge rusher? I know that's something that you talked to me a little about. Any value just in these defensive players? Is there one that stood out for you?
Yeah, so edge rusher, it's a really weak position group. There's not really any consensus at the top. Early, you were hearing Quiddy Pay, who's kind of an athletic guy coming out of Michigan, doesn't have a lot of game tape. He only played four games this year. There's Azeez Ojulari, the undersized rusher out of Georgia, who allegedly has a knee injury that some teams are scared of. We didn't hear anything about it till the combine check, so he looks like he could potentially fall. He's also listed as a linebacker in some places. You have Jalen Phillips, the Miami edge rusher, who's already medically retired after three concussions in his career. Gregory Rousseau opted out of the year, so there's really no consensus at the top of the edge rusher group. A name you're hearing sprinkled into the back of the edge rusher, at least in the first round, is Jason Owe, kid out of Penn State. Similar to Micah Parsons, I don't know what these Penn State athletic trainers are doing to these kids, but he might be the most athletic freak in the draft outside of Parsons. He's 6'5", 257. He ran a 4.37 40-yard dash, which is right up there with one of the best size-adjusted speed scores of any position player all time. He doesn't have a ton of experience at the position. He's only been a one-year starter in a COVID-shortened season, and he had zero sacks. He impacted the offense in other ways with a lot of quarterback pressures and quarterback hurries, so I wouldn't make too much of that. But you're just talking about a weak edge rusher class and one of the most athletically gifted kids we've ever seen come out of college. Right now, you can get him at plus 2,500, which is incredible odds. A 25-1 for Owe coming off the board first among edge rushers is a long shot that I like.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, listen, there are some guys like that where is that someone that you think – in terms of a team possibly going up to get, it's that type of risk reward player. I mean, again, Penn State, you know, maybe if he was a little faster, could have stopped Penix from getting over the goal line. That's all I really remember about.
He played great in that game, by the way.
He did. I remember the name. Not good enough. Sorry. But other than that, I mean, I know I mentioned him before. Obviously, Surtain is the preferred corner. I know we're jumping around a little bit, but talk to me about J.C. Horn a little bit. He seems to be the consensus second man off in the secondary. Do you think that's warranted? Is Farley in the mix? Asante Samuel? It seems like a massive drop after the first two corners.
So I think most people would say Caleb Farley's the better player when he's on the field. He just has a significant injury concern undergoing back surgery earlier this year. Allegedly, it's checked out, but I'm pretty sure it was his agent leaking that information. So he's still falling among the drafted corners that we see here. And J.C. Horn is the primary beneficiary of that. He's a big corner, 6'1", 205 pounds, great length, ran a 4.44. He's a very physical corner. He likes to play press man, and he's primarily on the boundary. I think there are some concerns with him. He wasn't as productive early in his career. And most of the production we saw this year actually came against Bo Nix. So yeah, you'll laugh at this stat, Ben, because I know you're familiar with Bo Nix. And those of you that don't know Bo Nix, he's the Auburn signal caller who is arguably the worst quarterback in the SEC, which includes players like Jarrett Garantano. But anyway, over the course of the year, J.C. Horn defends 8 passes and his 2 interceptions. 6 of those defended passes and both interceptions came against Bo Nix. So I do have some concerns. He's primarily locked into this press man role, so I don't think he's a fit in every single defensive scheme. Allegedly, Dallas really likes him, but I think he's somebody that could fall if he slips past the Cowboys, and you might see other players jump him like a Caleb Farley. So I like J.C. Horn a lot. I don't think he's a fit for every scheme.
Got to take shots at Tennessee making the show. We got all sorts of shenanigans. Yeah, I mean, listen, Bo Nix, all those stats, you should have filters, and I know we're getting more and more advanced, but you really should be able to toggle with stats in college football that say splits with and without Bo Nix at quarterback so we can get the true numbers.
Poor Seth Williams.
Poor Seth Williams. just Schwartz and co, but that's neither here nor there. Is there anything else? The last position for defense before we kind of sum up, you know, the first round and dive into some other topics, we don't hear anything about this, is safety. It's a very weak safety class. You've got Holland, you've got Woodard. What do you make of them? Is there anything really worth noting here?
You actually have some props on a couple of these guys. So Morig, he's basically the consensus safety one. He's the only one you'll find with an over-under in the first round. It's 26.5. Again, the safety class is really weak, so I don't have a great feel for that prop. It's not one I've taken. But after him, you're seeing the likes of Richie Grant or Javon Holland or Hamza Nasruddin, Jamar Johnson. Those are the next safeties on the board. Javon Holland actually has a prop, and it's available across most books right now. It's sitting in the mid to upper 40s, so we're talking a mid to late second rounder here. I think there's a decent chance he comes off the board before that. He's 6'1", 207, ran a 4.46 40-yard dash. Very active in his coverage. So he played primarily in the slot, which is a very good skill for safeties overall. It means he can be on the field in a lot of different sub packages. Also very active on special teams, very athletic kid. So I think there's a chance he comes off the board under that pick. And we've already seen that line move a little bit towards the under. So I think he's somebody to look at, but not much in the safety group overall. If you're looking at first round props, you can find 1.5 is the line. It's juiced towards the under, but I think that's still worthwhile too.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, yeah, there in terms of first round props, as we kind of look to a summary of the first round, I mean, these are the type of props that I find most interesting because you can kind of conceptualize where we're at. So for example, you know, total quarterbacks drafted in the first round, under 5.5 is juiced sky high. It's north of minus 500, but there are some other interesting ones that you can look at. I mean, wide receivers has a line, cornerbacks is over under 4.5 in the first round. The one I wanted to ask you about, I mean, again, massively juiced, tight ends over 1.5. Is there anyone outside Pitts that could even remotely get in the mix?
It's Penn State's Pat Freiermuth. He's more of a two-way tight end, and unfortunately, he only played 4 games this season. He had a shoulder injury, I believe, that ended his season. Otherwise, he might have gotten some first-round talk, but tight end has kind of been a position that's been a little bit devalued. There's a long learning curve with tight end. It takes a while for most prospects to produce outside of like your George Kittles, but he's the only other name worth mentioning, and I still think he's a second-rounder.
One last thing for the first round, but before I get into that, Chad, I just want to say it is fun to be back talking some football. I know that college football is a little ways away, but we are going to have content. Don't think that you're not going to see us until like September 1st when UMass plays, I think Penn State or something like that. We're going to be having content leading up to the season. We've got so much exciting stuff here. If you could hit that like button, subscribe to the channel so you don't miss it. If you have any suggestions, if you got shows that you want to see me and Matt and the whole gang, you know, Kyle's in chat, Eric's in chat, we've got everyone ready to go. We want to get after it. But the one thing I want to talk about in this first round that we haven't mentioned at all is running backs. We've got Travis Etienne, who probably has blocked you on Twitter at this point, and we've got Najee. What do you make of them? The line right now is over 1.5 first round running backs at plus 150, under at minus 190-ish. Floor is yours. Are those the first two backs off the board, and where do they go?
It's funny you say Etienne probably has me blocked because he's the RB I like the most in this class. Mm-hmm. But I still think it's worthwhile towards the under here. I have a position on this. It's from a little earlier in the season here, but right now you're hearing a lot of rumors that Pittsburgh is basically locked into Najee Harris with their pick, and they're currently sitting at 24. So that leaves Jacksonville, Cleveland, Baltimore, New Orleans, Green Bay, Buffalo, Baltimore again, and Tampa Bay. And any of those teams could potentially select a running back. You're hearing rumors that Buffalo and Tampa Bay are the most likely to do so. But at the same time, you're hearing rumors coming out of Buffalo that they really like what Devin Singletary has done this offseason. Tampa Bay, this is kind of a luxury pick for them at 32. And if they've learned anything, they should look back to the 2020 draft where Kansas City made the same decision instead of taking a depth offensive lineman and arguably costing them the Super Bowl. So I think it's still unlikely that two backs go in the first round, but there is some smoke out here that it could happen. It's looking pretty likely that Najee's the player that the Steelers like.
So you want to, yeah, just to explain, you thought that Etienne should have went out last year. Is that your take?
Yeah, so the reason Etienne may or may not have me blocked, I've just tweeted some stuff that Etienne should have came out last year when he was a junior rather than going back for his senior season. No offense, Clemson fans.
Chad has brought up friend of the show, Ryan Nelson. What do you make of Javonte Williams, who looks to be positioned as that third running back?
Javonte Williams, he was basically a non-recruit coming out of high school. He only had one Division I offer outside of like FCS and Ivy League schools, and it was North Carolina. He accepted it, and kind of the rest is history. He puts up two really productive seasons here. And when you look at running backs, you start running regressions and look at what are the most impactful stats for them moving to the next level. Force missed tackles. That way you can kind of isolate what the running back is doing independent of the offensive line, what they are actually creating on their own. And Javonte Williams is the best back in the class at these metrics. He leads the class in both force missed tackles per attempt and yards after contact per attempt. As far as his stature, he basically has it all. He's 5'10", 212 pounds, maybe a little bit bigger. He's not even 21 years old yet. Good athleticism, very good pass catcher. He had 25 receptions this year, and that was sharing a backfield with Michael Carter. So there's not really enough good things to say about Javonte Williams. For whatever reason, these draft analysts seem to continue to gravitate towards the Alabama and Clemson back, but Javonte Williams should be right there.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see the order. After you get past Najee and Etienne, I do think it's pretty wide open. I mean, there was a time where Chuba was in this conversation. Yeah, what?
People are on me on Twitter for saying things like Travis Etienne should not have gone back to school. And then you have the perfect example in Chuba Hubbard of why you don't go back to school.
It's hard to argue with that. I don't know what happened to that. That was just a loss from the opening game where they almost lost to Tulsa. There was problems up and down Oklahoma State's roster. I will say, as we transition, anything else you want to say in the first round? I know we'll circle back to your best bets if we missed any, but is there anything else you want to say of the kind of top tier players?
I don't think we missed anybody. One, I like Jalen Phillips, his under. It's at 21.5, depending on where you're looking. Again, the edge rusher group is one, I think, with a lot of volatility right now, but you're seeing people sour on Kwity Paye. You're seeing people sour on Azeez Ojulari due to injuries. Somebody has to come off the board first, and edge rusher is a very, very important position. I think Jalen Phillips has the most raw talent. The injury concern is very real, but you're starting to see some smoke, and he's been linked to Miami at 18 quite a bit. So I have a position on his under, but otherwise I think we've hit on most of it.
Yeah, and listen, news is going to pop up. Certainly we're going to stay up to date here at Also. That's why you should get Inside the Glass. And if not, follow me at JazzRazDFS. You got Matt_Gajewski. That is where you need to be. Certainly, as the news breaks, we will be monitoring, and there will be more value. Listen, I know everyone loves Thursday, but it's not like you can't bet these Friday props and see what comes up. There's a lot of value. I mean, you know me. I love to bet bad college basketball, bad college lacrosse. I'll do anything. I think the deeper you get, do you find that in the draft? Like, you think there's more value on – I know we're going to get to him, like Ian Book's prop, which is in like the 200s versus one of the top end prospects.
Yeah. Last year, the lock of the century was like Jake Fromm had a prop. It was like 67.5 and he ended up going at like 157.
Yeah.
And you can't. Yeah. Who was the Washington quarterback? His name is escaping me.
What? Dwayne Haskins?
No. Washington Huskies.
Browning?
No, the dude after him. Anyway, so it was the same situation.
Oh, Eason.
Yeah.
Eason. Georgia player? Yeah. Okay.
His prop was like 72.5, and he went these two guys went well on day three, and their props were extremely high. We're seeing the same thing with Kellen Mond this year and some other players. No offense, Tyler. But yeah, a lot of value on day two props.
Yeah, all Georgia. I almost said Jake Locker. No joke. I was going back. I was going the wrong way when you said Washington players. So yeah, Jacob Eason. We'll see about him. No, there is true. You just can't find that value because, again, when we're talking about small edges, like someone like Penny Sewell, if he drops, it's a couple spots and maybe you go over under, a number like 5.5, but it's not like he can go 40. That's impossible. That's impossible. But with these other late round guys, they could be off by several rounds. And that's something I think we can take advantage. And let's move to the sleeper picks. I'm just going to throw a guy out, and most people not going to know a lot about him. And I don't even know if there's a lot of actionable props. I will get on record, though. We're going to save this tape. Elijah Mitchell from Louisiana Lafayette is a running back that I really like. I've been adamant about this. They had a two-headed monster last year. And this is the type of guy, if he makes a roster and gets on a team, he can contribute. I know that's from the clouds. is there anyone, I'm looking at running backs right now, Gainwell's out there, Kylan Hill. I mean, are there names there, or do you look to a different position for maybe some of these sleepers?
Are you talking about players that we'll see like props jump up?
Potential. So the floor is yours. Obviously, if you have any bets, that fantastic. Let's hear them. And then just also, if there's anyone that you think maybe as a day two, you know, we're not going to unfortunately do another show here. Is there anyone maybe on a Friday or Saturday that you think keep an eye on and see where they land maybe?
Yeah, if we want to talk the running back position, first of all, I love Elijah Mitchell as well. I think he's a really good player to watch on day three. He's probably a little bit landing spot dependent just because of where we're expecting his draft capital to be. But he checked in at the Senior Bowl at 215, and then he cut a bunch of weight for his pro day. He was down at 201, but he ran a 4.38 40-yard dash. Either way, he's running really fast, even if he's at 215, which looks like it's more of his playing weight. Very productive at Louisiana Lafayette, so I love him on day three. He's a former wide receiver, too. He was actually recruited as a wide receiver. So if you're looking for a running back with good pass-catching skill set, his receiving numbers may not be as high because he wasn't a timeshare, but he definitely has that pedigree. Someone else I really like is Virginia Tech's Khalil Herbert. He was kind of buried on a horrific Kansas team, which actually recruited two good running backs, Puka Williams and Khalil Herbert. Somehow, I don't know how Kansas pulled that off. But he finally emerges with Virginia Tech after the transfer this year. And we talked about the forced missed tackles, yards after contact per attempt. Khalil Herbert really excels in those areas. He's very dynamic. They used him a lot on special teams. He was actually their preferred kick returner. He has size similar to like a Jerick McKinnon type back. He's more in the Aaron Jones range. So perhaps he doesn't play an every down role, but Chase Edmonds, Duke Johnson, he's kind of that build. But he has a very good skill set, caught passes, returned kicks. He's someone I like on day three as well.
So moving to wide receiver, because I do want to get to these guys. They're not going to be sleeper picks, but I just want your thoughts on, you know, we've talked about Chase a little. So we've got the two Bama guys in Waddle and Smith. We've got Rashad Bateman, who I'm very high on. I like his game. And then you've got some gadget guys. You've got Tony. You've got Rondell Moore, Tutu Atwell. Not as high on him, not going to lie. What do you make of the receivers as a whole? Is there anyone down, say, Amon-Ra, who's a guy that I've always had my eye on coming out of USC? What do you make of these guys in this class?
It's a deep wide receiver class. Interestingly, it's deep for kind of the slot mold, smaller gadget type players. Rondell Moore is kind of a complete anomaly, similar to Devontae Smith, but in the other way. He's actually heavier than Devontae Smith, but he's only 5'7". He's one of the shortest wingspans we've ever seen, if not the shortest wingspan. So there's questions about his fit in the offense, if they can use him as a vertical receiver with his 4.28 speed. But he's somebody that definitely should be drafted on day two. He was more of a gadget player at Purdue, hurt the last 2 years. I love the age 18 breakout. Anytime you have a player on the field very early in their career, that's something that I like. Later guys to talk about that fit this mold, Amon-Ra St. Brown has an age 18 breakout. He moved into the slot this past year. So he's played all over the formation at this point in his career, but very productive for USC. Tylan Wallace is a pure boundary receiver coming out of Oklahoma State with good measurables, good production, and good size adjusted speed. He just missed part of last year due to a torn ACL, which caused him to return to school for his senior season. I think both of those players are strong day two, late day two, early day three options.
So we got a question from chat. Our friend John Jefferson, good guy. He wants to know about the Packers. We were talking a little about this before the show. I know it's very difficult as you work down, you know, there could be trades. They could move out of 29. Who knows? Do you think that they give, you know, certainly maybe they'll draft another quarterback to set up behind Jordan Love and plan for the next 40 years. But do you think they give him a type of player, one of these slot guys, someone to work alongside Adams and co? Where do you think the Packers may go at that slot?
So the Packers have kind of a lot of needs. Luckily, they play in arguably the worst division in football with the Bears and the Lions and a Vikings team that's definitely trending in the wrong direction. So they should be able to win the division even with their current roster, just like they did last year where they wasted all of their day one and day two picks and still easily won the division. But the Packers have a need at wide receiver, of course. We know this. It's been a need basically since Aaron Rodgers entered the fold there. They have a need at corner. They re-signed Kevin King as kind of a stopgap there. They have an aging offensive line, an offensive line that's dealing with injuries. Notoriously, David Bakhtiari may end up starting the year a little bit late. They could address all those positions. But because of the depth in this class, the Packers are actually in a good spot. They could address all of those needs with their picks. It's a deep tackle class. It's a deep receiver class and a deep corner class. At 29, I would love if they could snag somebody like Ole Miss's Elijah Moore, a versatile receiver that played primarily in the slot at Ole Miss. but he definitely has the size and speed to potentially move to the outside. He's comparable to like a Tyler Lockett with 4.37 speed, very productive from the moment he stepped on campus at Ole Miss. He has an age 19 breakout, but I'd also like to remind people that he played with DK Metcalf, DeMarcus Lodge, and AJ Brown during his first season. And he was their primary kick returner in that season. And when DK Metcalf went down for the final four games of the year, Elijah Moore immediately went onto the field and played 90% of the snaps in the last four games.
It's going to be very interesting to see these teams. You know, I'm looking at someone now, just, I know I'm jumping a bit, but like Tevin Jenkins for that spot, if he dropped a little bit, maybe they bolster. Some of these positions are deeper than they seem. Obviously Slater and Sewell will not be there in terms of the line. And then really the last thing before we kind of sum it up and we're going to bounce on out of here is what do you make of the situation in terms of the QBs outside of these guys? I know that's always the popular thing. Everybody wants to talk about, you know, who's the QBs of the future and whatnot. After Lance and Jones, obviously we got Fields and of course Trevor Lawrence and Wilson. Where does it go? Does it drop off a cliff, or are those, you know, guys like the Lamar Jackson who kind of popped up, you know, Hurts, who, you know, the Eagles were comfortable getting? Who is that guy in this draft?
Yeah, it's funny. The year Lamar Jackson came out, I actually had him as the fourth overall player in the draft. I write a mock every single year with what I would do. So not to pat myself on the back, because I get stuff wrong every single year, but Lamar was very high for me. This year after the big five, and I don't even really want to include Trey Lance in the big five, there's a lot of concerns with the prospects. The only player who ever put up an elite season at any point in his college career was Kyle Trask. And for whatever reason, he's not gaining a lot of love. He wasn't a starting quarterback even in his high school days. He played with De'Arik King, who started ahead of him. And he ends up getting a scholarship to Florida based on his performance at a camp. He's behind Felipe Franks early in his career in 2019. Felipe Franks gets hurt, allows Kyle Trask to win the job. Then Franks transfers, and Trask has his basically career year where he threw more passes than Trey Lance has in his career. Now, he's the only one that's put up an elite season. If you look to the other players, it's Davis Mills, a quarterback out of Stanford, who's a former five-star recruit. He had a severe injury his senior season of high school, and he aggravated that injury twice. So he basically missed his first 2 years on campus. Then he took over the starting job halfway through Stanford's 2019 season for KJ Costello. And then unfortunately, the Pac-12 just didn't play a lot of games this year because of COVID-19. So only has 11 starts. We just haven't seen a lot of ball out of Davis Mills, but he's somebody that's gotten some first-round hype. Peter Schrager included him in one of his first-round mock drafts. The one thing I'll say about Trask, you could include Kellen Mond in this, there's hype about these kind of quarterbacks every single year. You're going to see mocks where Drew Locke is in the first round, where Mason Rudolph is in the first round, and it very rarely happens. So when these quarterbacks have listed props on the sports books, I'm generally trying to take a position on their overs if they come in inflated. And we're seeing that with players like Mond, who's sitting in the mid-70s right now. Trask is somebody I'd actually look under right now. And actually, since we've been on here, it looks like Trask has, maybe since this morning, has moved down about 10 points from where you could have gotten him. But players like Mond, players like Davis Mills, generally looking at the over on them.
Yeah, I mean, Trask is an interesting one. He's the same age as Sam Darnold. I don't know about that. I mean, I guess there's two schools of thought. Like, you can come in like Brandon Whedon style. How did that work out? Not great. But at the same time, maybe he's ready to play. You know, Burrow in some regards is like that. And before he got decimated, he looked very good. And if they can get some protection, maybe we'll see what he's made of. But I do think there's a pretty big gap. And you're absolutely right. Everybody's looking, and these guys, somebody has to slide into these. And maybe sometimes the real answer is that there's nothing there and it's forced. So keep that in mind. I may look to short some of these guys as well. I'm not convinced. But again, this is the final thing. You know, we were talking about this at the top of the show. It's not what I like. It doesn't really matter what I think. It's what are teams going to do. And all it takes is one team to want to make a move and grab one of these guys at the back end of the first or late, you know, early second or whatnot, to make all the difference. What is Jordan Klein in chat talking about? This guy's a character. Well, do you bet the Oscars? I don't want to transition too wildly, but are you an Oscars better?
No, man. I've seen like five movies in the last 5 years.
Okay. Well, you're
Oscars are movies, right?
Oscars are definitely movies, can confirm.
Okay. I get that confused with the music one.
The music one is the Grammys.
No, I'm not betting those.
No. Okay. Just wanted to know.
I would bet those. but I just don't have enough information. I'm not above betting anything, Ben.
That's true. And that's why we've got you here. And let's go into that, because we've thrown a lot out here. I know it's very hard to organize. Is there anything that we missed? I know we didn't talk about Slater. I think he's on your board. How do you structure your bets this week? Is there a priority? And then how do you work and kind of contort for people who may have not bet the draft before?
I think you need to look for different positions. So a lot of, especially at the top. So we'll use Justin Fields as an example here. So Justin Fields is somebody you're finding with a prop that's moving a lot. Right now it's at 8.5. If we hear that's on one particular book, it's at 7.5. So shop around there if you're taking the over-under. But there's other ways to get action on these players that I think you should take a look at, especially at the top of the draft, which is fairly solidified. Occasionally we see trades. You can look at some alternate lines, and even looking at some lines like a particular team to select Justin Fields, and you get much, much better odds. Like, for example, if you thought Detroit was going to take Justin Fields, you could get that at plus 1,100 as recently as yesterday. I haven't seen it lately, but if you're already taking a position on, you know, under 7.5 for Justin Fields, well, how many teams can really take him there without a huge trade? Detroit's the only one. So rather than betting the under on that prop, I would rather look at some alternate stuff like Detroit taking it and getting a much better line, if that makes sense.
I really hope he doesn't go to the Patriots. That's my big worry, is that they get him. But yeah, absolutely. Well said. I mean, I think you need to look, and it's just, I mean, to try to bring it back, because I know we've got a big DFS crowd. It's, you know, just trying to navigate, okay, if this guy is going to make value, how is he getting there? And then working backwards. And it's the same thing. Okay, if I'm cashing this prop, realistically, as you just mentioned, certain teams are not going to take a quarterback. Certain teams are not going to take a receiver, whatever position it may be. You can grab some extra value. You're incurring more risk because you're literally honing in on a pick, and you have to avoid trades and whatnot. But the reward could be pretty substantial. I know for me, the one bet that we talked about that I feel very good on is Penei Sewell. I think he's going in the top five. I think he's going to end up on the Bengals. Burrow, they need to protect him at all costs at this point. He is the best tackle in the draft. I think they just snag him at five. I believe he'll be available. And if he's not, I've already won the bet, so I don't really care. But that's the one for me that I'm going to hone in. You have to lay a little juice, but I assume you're comfortable doing that, particularly if you evaluate that it's worth it.
Yeah, I have a position on Penei Sewell, and it's under as well.
Dynasty. Are you a dynasty, NFL dynasty guy?
No, I am not.
Neither am I. I don't have time. Like, what happens if, I always wonder this, not to be morbid, what happens if somebody dies in your league? Like, do the players just go up for draft? I don't know how that works.
I think you try to replace the player, but I don't know. I'm not a dynasty player either. I do not have the attention span for that, Ben. I was in one dynasty league and I got kicked out of it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be removed from the Awesome O1. I do know that I drafted Justin Herbert way too early last year, because that's what I would do. I think I have Drew Lock as well. That might not work out. Maybe you are a secret dynasty guy. We will find out. But the last thing I want to say before we bounce on out of here, chat, and we've had some fun, if you guys have questions, I strongly recommend just get in for the week, if nothing else. Sign up for awesomeo.com, awesomeo.com/join. Buy a week package. You get in Slack. We're dropping bets there all the time. And it's a lot of people who are in chat right now. I can single them out. Blaine is our tennis guru. He is dropping guys I don't know existed. I'm in there. I just gave out Dartmouth. They won very comfortably while I was on this show in lacrosse. Certainly Matt is in there. We've got Greg from chat. All sorts of people. Great community, and it's worth it. You get in there, you get a couple good picks for this NFL draft. Make some money with us and have some fun. So any final thoughts before we bounce on out of here for what's going to be another exciting hot take edition of the NFL draft?
Yeah, just a couple other positions I have that I think are pretty good. One is Baron Browning, over 52.5, if you can find him. So he's an Ohio State linebacker. We talked about this being a very weak linebacker class overall. And historically, at least going back the last 3 years, you're not seeing that many linebackers come off the board that high. Right now, consensus Baron Browning is about linebacker 7 or 8. The top five in any order are going to be Micah Parsons, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Jamin Davis, Nick Bolton, and Zaven Collins, the kid out of Tulsa. So that's five linebackers right there. How many do we think go in the first round realistically? If you look at most mock drafts, you're seeing 2 to 3 linebackers come off in the first round, maximum 4. If Baron Browning is at picks 52.5, do we see 3 more linebackers come off the board in the second round ahead of him? I think it's very unlikely. And even looking at the teams that might select a linebacker in that range, I don't think you're looking at a ton of them. You're looking at teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New York Jets that have a lot of other needs. A team like Atlanta already has Deion Jones. Philadelphia is a team that has shown, historically at least, they're not valuing these devalued positions like linebacker quite as highly. And even teams like Carolina, Denver, they've addressed the position a lot in recent years. So I like over Baron Browning, the Ohio State linebacker at 52. Another position I have is Eric Stokes, under 45.5. The cornerback class is very deep, but there are some concerns at the top outside of Surtain, J.C. Horn, and Caleb Farley, who I still think comes off the board very high despite the injury concerns. Outside of that, you basically have a crop of corners with a lot of size issues. The only player who doesn't really have size issues is Greg Newsome, but he hasn't started more than 9 games in a single season for Northwestern. So there are durability concerns with even Greg Newsome, but Asante Samuel and Elijah Molden, the other two corners ranked very high, are very lacking in size. Eric Stokes is not, and he brings elite athleticism coming out of Georgia, and he actually has the production to back it up. He's somebody we've seen get a lot of steam late in the draft process after he ran a 4.29 40-yard dash. His completion percentage allowed was under 60%, and his passer rating allowed was just 43.6. So elite prospect, and you have a little bit of added cushion here where he doesn't necessarily have to be a first-round pick. You're getting him in the mid to low 40s, so he still could come off the board in the early second round. And he has entered some first-round mocks recently. Schrager had him inside the 20s in the last draft, so he's a hot name to monitor right now. I like the under on Eric Stokes.
That is what I'm talking about. That is dropping some knowledge right there. These are the type of bets, by the way, that I will absolutely be tailing because I think there's value. They're not household names. You really would have to dig. And most people are unfamiliar with those type of players. This is a random question. Not going to make money on this, but where do you think Stingley would be if he was in this draft?
I think he'd be fairly high. He's good size. And the LSU team we saw this past year was just far, far different than what we saw the year before. I'm actually happy for him that he can go back and hopefully, you know, produce it with LSU this year. But I mean, he did all of that as a true freshman. He should come off the board early no matter what.
Final thing, I'm just going to throw this out to you randomly and you can handle it. Gut reaction, who will be the number one pick in the draft next year?
I actually was talking with a friend of mine about this earlier today, and assuming it sticks with quarterback, I think there's three candidates: Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell, or Keaton Slovis. I think those are the three guys that could go number one.
And now my real final question, yes or no, is one of those three going to be holding the Heisman Trophy next year?
Dude, before the COVID-19 pandemic, so basically at the end of last year's college football season, I took a position on Keaton Slovis 100-1 to win the Heisman because he had such a great freshman year with USC. Obviously, USC played 6 games and he didn't particularly look that good in those 6 games, but I love Slovis going back to his freshman year. Sam Howell lost a ton of weapons around him, basically every single skill position player you could look at. So I think he might actually be a regression candidate. Spencer Rattler is really hard to bet against returning as much firepower as he did on offense.
It's going to be fun. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to talk some college football with you throughout the year. We are going to be doing that and more soon enough, pending that you'll come hang out with me because we're going to have a good time. We've got a lot to get to there. But chat, we're going to duck on out of here. I hope you guys have fun here. And more importantly than that, I hope you found some value from Matt. I think there's a lot of bets on the board that we can make some money here at awesomeo.com. So good luck. If you have any questions, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up in Slack, and stay tuned. This is not going to be the only NFL show you see in the near future. We've got things kicking off in addition to all the sports that are already in season. So good luck. Enjoy the draft Thursday and stay tuned for a big sports week ahead.